Thank you very much there, Martin. And not only challenges for you, but you've given us some challenges here today too. I wonder if there are any other questions from the floor? I think stand up, because you're going to be asked to answer these questions in a minute. I have a couple here that have been sent in through Pigeonhole. So we'll proceed with those while you think of other questions. I want to say, in terms of your Services Australia background and the Services Australia transformation, this question from Tanya Smith at NOUS goes to that background as well. So she'd like to know, what are the top 2 to 3 takeaway or lessons for government from the NDIS design and rollout on how to do large transformative systems and systems change that is human-centred? Get it right the first time?
Yeah, well, it's like you might not know the takeaway lessons. You know, it might be too early to tell, to use a famous response. So I think there's always a trade-off. Many people will say, oh, look, at, 3 years to go to full scheme rollout, or 4 or 5 was too quick. It should have been staged longer, etc. The counter to that, of course, is that major reforms and major investments like this, the window of political and policy opportunity is open for relatively brief times, and you have to jump through. And so there is a bit of crash or crash through to it to get something of this scale done when political bipartisanship does line up, as it has for the scheme to do. I think there are a range of lessons in the past, and there are people better placed actually to comment on sort of the first periods of time than I will be. In general, I take always the lesson that you have to manage the short term and the long term simultaneously. I talk, when people ask me what are my takeouts or my priorities, I talk about the short term of, we've got 8 or 9 core operational processes that we need to get the backlogs and time standards met. And so that is, that's a weekly cycle of data, discussion, reporting, review, feedback and action. So that is the short term. The long term is the vision that I started to outline as to how the scheme should operate, and that's in the sort of medium term of 12 to 18 months. And then you're thinking of the long term, the actual outcomes framework, which is particularly around those matters of community, social and economic engagement and participation. And so you need an organisation, you need an executive team that is able to constantly be thinking and working in those 3 time frames at the same time.
Mm. So, Martin, you certainly outlined that NDIA has been listening to the sector, and that the service guarantee, participant service guarantee, you've got lots of ideas as to how to improve that, and I noticed communication was certainly one of them. And I just wonder whether you could reflect on, public sector doesn't seem to have been very good at direct communication or really useful communication. Do you think the private sector is any better at that kind of communication, and are there some barriers that have caused communication to be somewhat stilted and bureaucratic?
So having worked extensively in both sectors, I think the answer is yes and no. I mean, we all are aware that there are many challenges for private sector organisations in terms of, in the finance sector in particular, in terms of their engagement with customers. I think that it is complicated when we have a complex offering, and we do, in the sense of you can have very black and white rules about entitlement, and it's easier to be a yes, no, and you get consistency. You mightn't like what those rules are, but at least they're there. Whereas the NDIS is designed to be individualised and customised, and to consider personal goals and objectives, and then to fund reasonable and necessary supports. That's a subjective term, as I said, and that can, you know, that does make it more difficult. And then it is also compounded by the fact that people, quite rightly, you know, want access, want reasonable and necessary supports, so there can be an appeal and testing process through reviews, through AAT, etc. And that at times means you're concerned not about the discussion right now, but, you know, is this statement going to be right when it comes to the internal review or the AAT hearing? And that can mitigate against personal communication as well. So they're the challenges. You know, can we do it better? Yes, I think we can. And you know, as I said, even things like decisions we've made to put names on letters to give reasons for decisions in the correspondence, you know, goes a long way to starting that.
Thanks very much. There's a question. Rebecca, if you could state your name and position, thanks.
Hi, Martin. Rebecca Cross, Community Services Director at ACT. I was also working in the Commonwealth when the NDIS was established. And I think at the time when it was set up as a national disability insurance scheme with a national agency, all ministers saw themselves as equal stakeholders. And in each jurisdiction, the state or territory government contributes almost half of the funding. I guess as the CEO of the national agency, when you see all of the announcements by the Commonwealth Minister on service guarantees, is there a tension for you in sort of being a national agency accountable to all ministers, or does it feel more as though you're working for the Commonwealth?
It feels like I've got lots of bosses. The most important are the 340,000 participants of the scheme, of course. So I have a board, I'm appointed by a board, and the chairman thinks she's got a say as well, and that's important too, and that's a role that's there in the Act, and Helen Nugent does a great job with it. Yes, there's a Commonwealth Minister, and it's a Commonwealth agency, and you know, I'm employed under Commonwealth legislation, but in, you know, the first 2 or 3 months I've been to every state except the Northern Territory, met with state ministers and their heads of departments. We're very active ministerial council, probably one of the most active in the COAG system, meeting coursely. And we had the first of those, as you know, the first that I attended of those in Perth in December. And state ministers certainly you know, contributed strongly as to their perceptions and their views as to how things should work. Of course, we can't deliver the scheme properly for the participants without close integration with schemes that are the province of the states and territories, particularly the health system, the education system, the justice system, you know, are all state and territory responsibilities, and where our scheme interfaces with them necessarily requires close integration between us and those state systems. I think one of the advantages I hope I bring to the job is that I've worked, you know, as a New South Wales state public servant and a Commonwealth public servant, so sort of know the ropes from both sides, and certainly want the agency to be seen as a good partner with other Commonwealth agencies, but also with all state and territory agencies as well.
Thanks very much, Martin.
But I don't get involved in ministerial announcements. Yeah. Someone.
Keep your head down. We've just got time for one more question, Martin.
Hello. Jason Kambowski is my name, and I'm Westpac's Global Head of Public Sector. My question's really, slight comment as well, is more reflective of my personal experience with the NDIS. I'm a carer for my brother who's Down syndrome, and he's now in his 50s, and I've dealt with the NDIS over the last 3 years since he opted into the program. And can I say there has been a dramatic change in my experience with the NDIS over that period of time? You know, the initial experience was a very difficult one, very bureaucratic, very at arm's length, even to the point, and it was interesting in your presentation you raised about the capacity to see a plan in a draft form. I'll never forget at the end of a 3.5-hour consultation session, identifying his needs and then asking if I could have a draft copy of the plan that would be submitted, to be told, I'm sorry, we can't print one out. Kind of the old computer says no approach. And having constant battles around plans and how you change them. And then 6 weeks ago was his third plan process, and I just saw the change in the attitude of those that I engaged with, the authority was enormous. You know, I hesitate to say helpful because they were helpful, but it was a much more engaging and open process. And I could see that there had been clearly a cultural shift in the way that those that worked for the organisation now engage with their customers and their clients. So I'm interested in, you know, what do you think is the biggest thing that's led to that cultural change that I've observed? And I've spoken to a few other people that have been in a similar situation to myself, and they've expressed the same responses around seeing a cultural shift in the organisation. What's really, really driven that?
Sure. Well, thanks for a great question. and I'm really pleased to hear for you and your brother that has been your more recent experience. I've been there 3 months, so I'm not going to take any credit whatsoever for that sort of change experience. I really do think you've just got to remember the sheer pace at which this organisation was stood up from nothing to offices across the entire country and providing services to people from the remotest outback camps to our biggest cities, and genuinely bringing people into the scheme, you know, at the rates at its peak of 10,000-15,000 new participants, each individually having to get a plan in each month, even more, 20,000 a month at the peak. And so I think there was just you've got to keep your head above water and get ahead of the tsunami. And a credit to all the people who were there, that they did that while standing up an agency, opening new offices, hiring staff, computer systems, the works. Now we've still got lots of operational volume, but there's just a little bit of sense of going back and saying, well, how can we really do things, you know? Do we have to not give a plan summary out or a draft plan out? We can go back, and the point about printing was that's not a policy decision. That was actually a genuine technical constraint on remote edge devices, if I go into detail. But again, we've gone back with colleagues at DHS Services Australia, and we've got a way to do that now so we can print in the offices. It's just been the maturing of the scheme. I think the passion of the staff, the commitment of the staff to want to have that sort of experience, be it the agency staff or the staff in the local area coordinators, the partner organisations, was always there. And I think we've got a little more breathing room for that passion to shine through. And I'm glad to hear that's what you're experiencing.
Thanks, Martin. I think one of the questions on Pigeonhole kind of follows on from that, which is, what are the skills and the workforce demands that NDIS will need as it matures into the future, particularly with increasing demand in care-related services, health education and disability services?
Well, I think, I'm not sure that, I mean, there's staff within the agency or staff in the sector more generally, and so I spoke about the 90,000 forecast new jobs, which are across the whole range of support services from disability support workers, attendant care, through the full range of allied health services that get provided. And we've got challenges there. I mean, there's nowhere, as I understand it, to study occupational therapy in Tasmania. So we've got demand there, but there's nowhere to train. Young Tasmanians who want to study that have to leave. They go to Victoria usually and often don't come back. So you've got workforce development issues, not just in total, but region by region as well.
Yeah. Okay, and just the last question is one from Pigeonhole, which really relates to that as well, but is there some way that the NDIS can better ensure niche markets for disability care, such as the early onset of dementia, assisted living, where, as you mentioned before, because of the nature of the disability, the market is very thin? Do you have any ideas about how you could better ensure niche markets in those thin areas?
Well, I mean, the starting point is, you know, that we are providing funding for, you know, package funding for participants who, you know, meet the criteria, who gain access, so they have money to spend. That's one half of it. I've talked about the workforce development side of thing, which is led by DSS. What joins demand and supply up in any market is information. And I think we need to do, as mentioned in the speech, more work about making information available about the scale of demand, how many participants, what size budgets, where they are, what sort of services are in their plan supports, to help stimulate the market. Markets work best with information, and we've got a lot of it. I think we're getting better at providing that.
Terrific. Look, thank you very much. With that last question, Martin, I just want to say, I started out by saying what a huge challenge you had taken up, but it's clear to me that your optimism after 3 months remains.
Absolutely.
And that clearly you and the NDIA have been listening out there. Thank you very much for your time today, and we look forward to meeting the challenges you've set out to us, as well as watching how the NDIA progresses. Thank you very much for your time.
I've got my seat. Are these my seat of socks?
Yeah,
oh, very good. Okay, thank you.